Hi, welcome to the Friedhof Institute of Progressive Halakha. I'm Rabbi Mark Wyshovsky, and this is the 12-minute shiur number 15, Coercion, Consent, Marriage, and Divorce. The source sheet for this shiur, as always, is available at friedhofinstitute.org/learning. Scroll down to the 12-minute shiur. In our last two installments, we've talked about how the halakha recognizes the possibility that one's consent to a legal transaction, like the sale of property, can be obtained through force or coercion. We've discussed the obvious logical and moral problems that arise out of this fact, and we've looked at some ways in which the sources try to resolve those problems. In this installment, we consider the interplay of coercion and consent in the very sensitive field of dinei ishut, marriage and divorce. By that, we mean the way those institutions are defined under traditional halakha, which, as we know, is hardly egalitarian in this realm. Under traditional halakha, the wife is at a serious legal disadvantage when it comes to protecting her interests. We progressives, of course, see this as a rank injustice, and our various movements have sought in various ways to remedy that injustice. Well, it turns out that the traditional halakha also recognizes those injustices in the laws of marriage and divorce. It too seeks a remedy, which it finds in that very interplay of coercion and consent. So let's begin with the Talmud, Baba Batra 48b, that's on line one of the source sheet. Amar Amemar, Taliyua v'kadish kidushav kidushin. Amemar said, if a woman is coerced into accepting kidushin, literally, if she is suspended, like from a tree or a house, a roof, until she agrees, then the marriage is legally valid. Now, you'll recognize the similarity between this statement and the one by Rav Huna that we've examined in our last two installments. Taliyuhu v'zabin zavine zavine. If they suspend him until he sells his property, the sale is valid. It's valid, we've seen, because the Talmud concludes, agav unse gamaru makne. As a result of the coercion, mainly because you want it to stop, one makes a reasoned decision to sell. Well, in this case, the wife is in the position of seller. She has to decide whether to accept the man's offer of kiddushin, or marriage, and her agreement here is likewise a reasonable instance of gemirat da'at, of free will consent. It is probably the best decision she can make under the circumstances, right? Well, Mar Bar Rav Ashi comes along to say in lines 7 through 13 that this is not a case of valid kiddushin. Why not? Hu asa shelo kehogen, lefichach asu imo shelo kehogen, v'af ke'in ho rabbanan l'kedushei mineh. Since he acts unjustly towards her, we act unjustly towards him. Now, what does that mean? Well, valid kiddushin requires that the man give to the woman an object of value, like usually a ring, it can be a coin or anything else that's worth something, but this object has to be his own property. So here, the rabbis retroactively annul his ownership of that property. Rashbam, lines 17 through 21, explains that min ha-Torah, according to Torah law, the marriage is in fact a valid one. After all, even though she accepted the kiddushin under duress, the halakha regards that acceptance as consensual, just like the law of sale. But because this guy is such a jerk, the rabbis will give him a taste of his own jerkiness. They declare that the money or ring that he gave to the woman was in fact hefker, or ownerless at the time of the transaction. And since it turns out he performed kiddushin with an object that we now know did not belong to him, it turns out there's no marriage, no marriage ever took place. Now, the issue of hafka'at kiddushin, the annulment of marriage in halakha, is a complex and fascinating one, and we'll focus on it in a future installment. For now, it's enough to note that the rabbis utilize coercion, the legal confiscation of the man's kiddushin money, as a remedy for the coercion he used against the woman, whose acceptance of that money while sitting in the tree is technically regarded as real acceptance. The interplay of coercion and consent. Now, on to divorce. Almost the entire halakha of divorce is rooted in one verse of the Torah, in Deuteronomy 24, verse 1. And take a look at lines 26 through 31, where Rambam cites one of the things that the rabbis learned from that verse, namely, that a get can only be issued upon the husband's consent. If he doesn't consent to the get, then there is no divorce. And this, too, is a major injustice under traditional halakha, where a wife whose husband refuses to issue her a get remains legally bound to him, even though the marriage is irretrievably broken. Sometimes the wife must yield to the husband's extortionate demands before he will consent to set her free, as he should do to rebuild her life. So it's fascinating that classical rabbinic law developed the idea that sometimes, under certain circumstances, it's perfectly kosher to make the husband consent to the divorce. Let's reconsider a passage from the Sugya in Bava Batra that we saw back in installment 13. It's on lines 34 through 40. V'chein ata umel begitei nashim kofin oto ad sheyomar rotze ani. A baraita reads, a person's consent can be obtained by means of coercion in cases of divorce, where the Beit Din coerces the husband until he says, "Rotze ani, I willingly consent to issue the get." But the Talmud responds to this, "V'dilma shanei hatam, maybe that case is different, de mitzvah lishmo divrei chachamim, because it's a mitzvah to heed the instruction of the sages." In other words, since it's a mitzvah, since it's the right thing to do, the husband consents to issue the divorce, even though we need to use force to get him to consent. Now, how does that make sense, right? I mean, I may know something is a mitzvah, but if you have to beat me over the head in order to get me to do it, I'm not sure how you can really call that my consent. But Rambam gives us a classic explanation. On lines 50 and 61, he zeroes in on the right question in this context. V'lama lo batel get ze, shehare hu anus. Why is this get, the one obtained through coercion, not invalid? Why is it not batel? Seeing that it has been coerced from the husband and is not a product of his ratzon, his free will consent. Having posed the question, Rambam answers it. Physical pressure is called ones, that is, illegal coercion, only when it's used to force someone into doing something that they are not obligated by the Torah to do. But if we're talking about a mitzvah, like, following the instruction of the Beit Din to issue a get, then we presume that the husband is a good Jew who really wants to be part of the community. The only reason why he does not consent to the divorce is that his yetzer hara, his evil impulse, has overpowered him and is controlling his behavior. Thus, when we apply physical pressure against him, that is, when we beat him, what we're really doing is weakening his yetzer so that his real self is able to regain control and express its consent to the divorce, which is what he really wants to do. Now, maybe you're not entirely persuaded by Rambam's psychological theory. After all, if he meant this literally, that would pretty much do away with the concept of consent in toto. After all, if you can force somebody into agreeing to do the right thing and say that that is really what they want to do, how can a person ever choose to do the wrong thing? And isn't the whole system of the Torah and its moral law based on the idea that we can freely choose to do evil as well as good, which justifies reward and punishment, justifies the idea of moral responsibility and all of that? The theory is too full of problems to be taken literally. But you have to admit, whether you agree with them or not, you have to admit that the Rambam has, at least on his own terms, squared the circle. He's demonstrated how coercion can legitimately produce consent, a consent of which the law, the halakha, takes note. For us, the important point here is not the psychological one. The important point is the theme of justice that unites the two subjects we've discussed here. In both cases, marriage and divorce, the law of the Torah allows the husband to abuse the power of consent, either by coercing the wife's consent to kiddushin, or by refusing to give his own consent to divorce in cases when he should. And in both situations, the rabbis utilize the power of coercion, either by confiscating his kiddushin money retroactively, or by coercing him to divorce in order to right the imbalance of power and to release her from the oppressive marriage bond. Let's call it creative coercion, or perhaps kafiyah l'shem tzedek, coercion for the purpose of justice. The existence of this power raises the obvious question, why haven't today's Orthodox rabbis utilized that power and applied it, the possibility of creative coercion, in order to secure justice once and for all for women whose husbands, for no good reason, refuse the demand to divorce them? There are ways in which they could get the husband to consent to do the right thing. Well, that's a very good question, why they haven't done that, a question for which we, at any rate, have no good answer, because as far as we're concerned, and as far as we can see, the solution lies right here within the text that we've learned in this installment. This has been the 12-Minute Shiur number 15, Coercion, Consent, Marriage, and Divorce, from the Frihof Institute of Progressive Halakha. Thanks for learning with us, and Lehitraot.